The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course the DraftKings Network. However you're taking us in this morning, this Wednesday before March Madness, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, producer number nine, so much more than a producer. Are you pumped, Kelly?
Yo, yo, I'm pumped.
What a week this is. So great.
Let's go. I'm ready, man.
We will have on the show today lots of college basketball, of course. Peter Keating and Jordan Brenner will join us. They are the co-hosts of Underdogs on the DraftKings Network. I have known Peter for over a decade. I used to be at ESPN, the magazine, when I knew him back in the day. We met at the Sloan Sports Conference. They do this thing every year called Giant Killers, which really identifies not only the characteristics, of course, of what teams, what the profiles are of teams that traditionally are capable of upsets in the big dance, but also they will identify which teams that applies to this season. Come March Madness, beginning tomorrow. I know the first fours are being played, and we're going to talk about that here momentarily. JVT on College Hoops and Pro, Jim Root from Three Man Weave, James Patrick Root, and Will Hill with his thoughts. I got a trio of tennis picks. Kelly's going to talk Valspar Open and golf, Valspar Championship, I should say. I do have to throw in a Survivor tidbit, my one Survivor tidbit, if you're playing NCAA Survivor. We'll get into all that. First, though, the first four games from last night. One, Howard University. Ah, the Bison. Valiant, furious comeback. Three shots at a three to tie it up against Wagner. They couldn't get it done, and Wagner advances in the NCAAs. Sorry, Howard. It was a good shot. 71-68. Wagner wins it outright as three-point dogs, plus 140 money line dogs.
And as you said, you had three shots at the end.
Three shots at the
three
end.
Three good looks.
They were down 17. Looked like they were going to just, you know, fizzle away. They didn't. Good effort, but didn't get there. So Wagner advances into the big dance, or into the round of 64, let me be clear. And then Virginia happened. And Colorado State beat Virginia last night, 67-42, a 25-point win in a game that the 42 ain't at all really descriptive of what happened in this game. Colorado State was a 2.5-point favorite. They won. They clear that going away. And I'll just listen. This gives us our final opportunity, Kelly, because once the round of 64 starts tomorrow, no one's going to care about the committee
anymore.
Nobody's going to care about it.
But before we launch into this, yes, real quick, can we just mention the fact that there was a, like, this game, the total actually came into play, sort of?
It kind of did, but it kind of didn't. So here's what happened. So I don't know if you all noticed this. So True TV, for those of us who like to live bet college basketball, True TV was way behind. It was 50,
oh, really?
Yeah, I timed it. We noticed that it was way behind. We couldn't live bet the games last night. It was 50 seconds, 5-0. I timed it behind live. So there was no live betting. So by the time we got to the next game, I was like, well, I got to preflop the under first half and full game. I wouldn't have done that if there was live betting available. I would have been like, well, let's see if they score a lot early, and then I'll jump in live. So first half was easy peasy, it looked like, and then there was a run of points, and you're like, wait a minute, this is back in play at 55.5. And then it was easy because Virginia scored 14 points in the first half, 27-14 they trailed in the first half. And then, yeah, the 122.5 or whatever it was, again, exactly, I think it was 122.5 that I had last night on the full game, didn't really get into play, but I get what you're saying. It got closer than you thought it would.
You just look at a score afterward, yeah, you're like, well, it wasn't too far off.
Okay. So I just want to say this for the last time, we can moan about the committee. We'll say what we've said all week, what everybody has said all week. It's rare that everybody is on the same side of an argument, and then a shining example that corroborates that comes through. But good God, this is why Virginia should have never been considered. This is why a team like St. John's or Indiana State, right, should have, you probably were watching this game last night, and they were like, there it is. This is the I know we moan about the committee every year, but this was a particularly Hall of Fame poor performance by the committee, and Virginia showed it last night at just how poor they were. Now, that's all I want to say about the committee, because everybody's saying it. We've been saying it. It's sort of a hack sort of opinion on things at this point. It is what it is, and we're all going to forget about that tomorrow starting, although St. John's and Indiana State and the Pitts of the world won't either. I get it. But what I wanted to focus on last night, while everybody appropriately, right, including myself, because I tweeted about it, was just irate about how just this malpractice. Everybody on the committee should be fired. While everybody was focused on that, quietly, right, Virginia went the final 9 minutes and 19 seconds, or 9 minutes 20, however you dice it out officially, without scoring a point. Not without scoring a field goal, without scoring a point. 0 points, okay? And at halftime, I started to think to myself, I'm like, okay, I get it. The committee jacked this all up, and everybody at the halftime is going crazy about that, and so am I. But is anybody seeing, like, this is kind of, this 14. Is unbelievable. And then they start the second half, right? And they go the next 3 minutes and 21 seconds without scoring a point. I'm not talking about a field goal. I'm talking about 0 points, like not even randomly getting fouled on a shot.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's 12 minutes and 41 seconds of not scoring a point in a college basketball game, let alone an NCAA tournament game. I get it, it's first four, but it's still technically a tournament game. So I started thinking to myself, self, if I can say that, I'm like, where does this rank? While we're all focused on this committee, what we're watching could be historical. So it's, you may find this unsurprising, but you can't really find much on longest droughts in right. games.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I spent an, because you could, there was nothing to watch on the basketball court. I spent an inordinate time trying to research this last night. And here's the best that I did. And it's kind of fascinating. And I would say by the research that I did, it is probably one of the 10 longest droughts, top 10, just to be conservative, because I don't know exactly. But conservatively, it's probably one of the top 10 longest droughts in a college basketball game, on a D1 college basketball game in history. And for NCAA tournament games, who knows, it might have been the longest. I would have to see on that. But let me just talk to you about the here are the three longest droughts in the history of the NCAA that I could find. The third longest, which I have no recollection of whatsoever. Remember, Virginia's drought last night was 12 minutes and 41 seconds. We'll get to all the brackets and all with all our guests momentarily, but I wanted to nerd out on this.
And in real time, because
real time,
it was like 50 minutes because of halftime. Yeah.
Okay, so they went, their drought yesterday was 12:41. Third longest that I could find was 13:53. I don't remember this game. Utah State held Idaho scoreless for 13 minutes and 53 seconds. The final 7:49 of the first half and the first 6:04 of the second half in a game in 2006. I have no recollection of it. The second longest I have no recollection of either, which was December in 1984, UMass held Columbus State scoreless for 15 minutes and 33 seconds. Don't remember that either. But number one, Kelly, I remember. I remember it well. And anyone of a certain age, and this is why, like, I've done this show for 7.5 years. I've done the podcast for a decade before that. No, not a decade before, but almost a decade before that. And we've talked about almost every, like, historical thing. You remember where you were when this happened. I'm not sure I've ever brought this up, but Virginia triggered it last night. The longest drought in the history of an NCAA basketball game. I'm a child of the 80s, but I'm also a child of the very late 70s. I brought up, you know, the Orioles losing to the Pirates in 79. The We Are Family Pirates crushed me as a kid, as a little boy. 78, the Washington Bullets actually won the NBA championship. A whole generation doesn't even conceive that that's possible, let alone that their name was the Bullets. Sports Illustrated ran the story on page 75 before Magic and Bird were drafted the next year. But in February of 1979, and I grew up in D.C., we were in the heart of ACC country and then in the middle of ACC and Big East play. It's the greatest place to grow for college basketball. We were massive. Like, I know we have the Greg Petersons of the world who are like these encyclopedic knowledge of college basketball today. And I always say to myself, if Greg could only have grown up when I did, where I did, when college basketball was what it was. So if there was an ACC tournament game, the teachers would look the other way so that we could watch it. Seriously, that's how much we were into it. Jim Spanarkle, who was doing color last night, I remember him playing for Duke. That's how old I am, right? So February of 1979, Duke is playing Carolina. Duke had just lost the national championship the previous year to Kentucky and Goose Givens. So they had Mike Jaminski, who's 6'10". Carolina had just beaten Magic in a game in December. So Duke and Carolina, I go over to my friend Alex Spence's house. That's how big a deal this is in the middle of the school week to watch this game. And Dean Smith, there's no shot clock. Forget no three-point line. There's no shot clock.
Yeah.
Dean Smith decides, because Mike Jaminski is 6'10", we don't have anybody on our team that's that tall. We want to pull him out from their packed zone defense. We're going to go four corners. Kelly, they held the ball. So the tip goes, Duke gets the ball, Duke scores, it's 2-0. Carolina went into the four corners for 11-plus minutes. They did nothing. And they're like, we got to get Jaminski out. And Duke's coach, this is before Krzyzewski, Duke's coach Bill Foster's like, I'm not sending them out from the zone.
Yeah, so do something.
We watched 11
something.
Minutes of basketball where all they did was throw around. By the way, and then a guy on North Carolina by the name of Rich Yonaker, because I remember that name. It began with a Y, and the name was funny, so somehow it stuck in my brain. For whatever reason, I guess he got bored, and he decided to shoot. And he airballed it. And by the way, it's like the first known time when crowds chanted airball.
Wow.
That's where that goes back to. You know how Jimmy was the first to do season win totals in 1989? Because someone walked up and said, can you make a season win total on the Cowboys? Yeah, that's where the airball thing traced back to this game. The score at halftime was 7-0 Duke.
That's awesome.
7-0 Duke. And then finally, at halftime, they decided, okay, we'll play real basketball. And I think they won 47-40, looking up the score, right? So 20 minutes and 48 seconds.
They decided, or someone came into the locker rooms and was like, you better play some damn basketball.
Well, it was
out
bad
there
for the game, too, yeah, right? Yeah. But Duke was North Carolina was quote unquote held scoreless, really by their own coach, Dean Smith, for 20 minutes and 48 seconds of that game. But Virginia, so if you throw that out because they did that to themselves, that Virginia performance last night was historic. That had to be top 10.
I mean, a shot clock is, I mean, it's a massive difference. It's the whole
massive
thing of what
difference.
You're talking about. Like, that's...
This is with a shot clock.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, was that unbelievable. Nice job, committee. JVT, his thoughts on the bracket this year. That's next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today. Get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code ANG. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year. That includes our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Plus our March Mania betting guide with best bets for every game and round of the tournament. Remember, though, to use promo code ANG.
ANG, folks, like A. Numbers Game. You can go to the website now and see me putting in over bets for NBA games tonight as soon as Giannis gets rolled out.
I can finish this whenever you want me to. ANG, get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite, all at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine and More. Drink responsibly. Be 21. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada at the D. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Steve in Vegas. It's 5 a.m. in Vegas, an opening day in Major League Baseball. The Dodgers broadcast is blacked out. Obviously, I'm a bad fan not supporting MLB by making the quick local trip to Japan. Maybe if I knew a good sushi spot on the way. When will MLB stop these archaic blackout rules? By the way, Dodgers win it 5-2. What do you got them at now? 157-5, something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Curious.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Jack and a Prius 2.0.
Japan.
Megapod with Will Hill, who'll be on the show later. He said, was awesome. Has me tearing up my bracket before the tournament even starts. Don't forget, Lamar Jackson overrated. I don't know why I threw that in. Bainbridge DeWeese. I'm always curious about the lag. How do you measure it? Oh, talking about the live betting. Do you just see where the live betting app updates the score and then when the TV shows it, or is there some more precise method? I did it last night when it went to 1959 in the second half because we knew it was really behind. When it went to 1959 on the app, I then hit the stopwatch, and waited to see when it got to 1959 on the screen. 50 seconds, 5-0. Huge lag.
Yeah, any, whether live betting on the app or just pull up any real-time box score, it should have what the real time is on there, whether it's the score or ESPN or whatever.
Ladies and gentlemen, he's the co-host of VSiN Primetime. He's also, of course, our senior NBA analyst, and for our purposes today, a college basketball fan and predictor of brackets. It's the great Jonathan Von Tobel, everybody. How you doing, JBT? Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line.
I'm good. Are we going NIT? UNLV Princeton coming up. That's going to be a lot of fun. What are we talking about here? Something going on?
Well, first of all, let's talk about baseball because you have a Blue Angels hat on. Not those Blue Angels, but a Angels hat that happens to be blue. Do you have a season-long baseball that you could share first based on that?
Oh, yeah, sure. I've got a couple. So I'll mention very quickly because, you know, I do enjoy your spots at Fezzik, so I don't want to get in trouble. I did bet the Yankees under their win total when it was 94.5 a little bit ago. So I do think that that's one that, of course, you know, part of it was I think they're a little thin and they might get injured. Gerrit Cole, we know what's going on there. I also bet the Royals over their win total, Gil. I kind of like this team. I think they're spunky. I think they're going to be a lot of fun on offense. I think they're going to be a pain in the butt every single time out. I think that they're going to be able to have some success offensively. I have questions about their pitching, but enough to go over their win total. So those are the two ones that I've got so far.
All right. You bet yes on the yes-no on spunky for the Royals. Likes the Royals.
Yeah.
Okay. You meant Fezzik with imposing the fine on you for something past posted?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can tell Kelly was confused, so I wanted to interpret. All right, let's talk.
Listen to a numbers game.
Appreciate that. Let's get the NBA out of the way. Any plays tonight?
Nothing official yet. The ones that I'm looking at here, first off, Memphis taking on Golden State. We're sitting at 11. Draymond's questionable. Desmond Bane's been back for the last two games, and he at least gives them a 20-point-per-game score that's got a little spunk to him, can play on-ball defense. And Warriors have not been playing pretty well here. I think what we got them at, like 3-6 against the spread in their last nine games. And Draymond might not play. I think I mentioned that too. So I think given the fact that the Warriors have kind of had a little trouble on offense, guys, with these changes in lack of foul calls, teams are grabbing a Curry, not letting them get free. I think Memphis can go in there, muck this up, stay inside of that number. And I don't want to hurt myself, so I'm not going to do it, but I'll just say that the Clippers, I think, are very live on the road in Portland.
He doesn't want to hurt himself. Do you feel as bullish? I lied, last NBA thing, since you bring up the Clippers. Do you feel as bullish on the Clippers, because you are Mr. Clippers around these parts, do you feel as bullish on them as you do heading into the playoffs?
Oh, I'd be lying if I said yes, right, just given the fact that they've just kind of scuffled here a little bit. I do think that the nature of their roster, right, with like Paul George in and out of the lineup about a week ago, James Harden being in and out of the lineup recently, Russell Westbrook not being there, Terrence Mann has been dinged up, Norm Powell's been dinged up. There hasn't been as much continuity as you would like, so I think I'm kind of holding out hope that once you get these guys consistently available, they'll revert back to form. But, no, I think it would be hard to sit here and say, yep, I feel the exact same amount of confidence that I did before they lost as a 9.5-point favorite to the Hawks the other day. So I think that once they're a little bit healthier, more consistent, I think they're going to get back on track.
All right. Since you mentioned UNLV and you mentioned the NIT, let's go to the NIT. Do you want to start with that game or somewhere else?
Oh, I mean, no, I was just kidding. I will say for UNLV, one of the big things to look out there for, and I think the market's kind of accounted for this, is the fact that one of their better players, Luis Rodriguez, apparently did not make the trip. So this is up to 3.5 in a couple of spots. I think you can kind of overcome it because as long as you're going to be healthy up front, that's going to be a big thing for UNLV. Problem is you're not entirely healthy up front either. So I think Princeton, coming off of a disappointing loss in the first round of the Ivy League championship or the semifinals, would be the play here against the, we'll use it again, spunky UNLV team that ended the season pretty strong. So that was the only real thought I had on the NIT.
Okay. I was going to ask you if you thought San Francisco plus the points against Cincy might be a thing, but okay. Let's go to the brackets. Let's go to March Madness. You did I catch this on Twitter that you filled out your brackets and then you just threw them out to everybody yesterday?
Yeah, I gave out my official bracket yesterday. Was I not supposed to do that?
No. That's a beautiful thing. Okay. Not everybody does that. Are there any, give me the highlights of your bracket. What did you end up doing?
Okay, so the highlight of my bracket, let's see, how about, I think the big one would be Oakland moving on against Kentucky, of course, and I think I actually had them going on to the Sweet 16. I will double check that. But my thing here is, and I did bet Oakland in this game too, so it kind of ties in, but when you, Gil, you know, when you play at a slow pace and you shoot a lot of threes, but you shoot those threes efficiently, right, you kind of up that variance against a team that's better than you. I think that Oakland's going to be pretty live here to stay inside of this number against a Kentucky squad that, you know, it's funny, I like how we as a collective focus on the negatives for some squads, but then others, because we like them, we choose to ignore them. Look, Kentucky got a very big win at the end of the regular season in Tennessee, where the Volunteers shot like crap in the first half. We've also seen Kentucky fall flat on their face in a lot of big spots because of their defensive play. So if I'm going to get a team like Oakland that's going to slow the pace down but ratchet up the amount of variance with the amount of threes they take and at an efficient clip, I think that Oakland's going to be pretty live there. So I think that's probably the big one. Oakland making a run to the Sweet 16, eventually losing to Florida in my bracket. New Mexico, one of my final four teams, but going chalky outside of that, Iowa State, Houston, and Tennessee, my other three final fours, right? You don't want to get too crazy with some of the upsets. And I think that's about it. And Auburn taking out Connecticut in the Sweet 16, I think would probably be the highlights of my bracket.
Jeez, committee really did a number on UConn with that, playing Auburn in the Sweet 16. So give your final four again real quick.
Iowa State and New Mexico and Houston and Tennessee.
Iowa State, New Mexico, Houston, Tennessee. Well, we got the Houston, Tennessee together, you and I. So God help you with that part. But interesting. I would have, by the way, if there was a market on would JVT take New Mexico to get to the Final Four, I think I would have hit that as a bet. I had a feeling we'd go Mountain West there. Okay, so as far as round of 64 spreads, what did you bet?
Yeah, so, all right, round of 64 and what we got so far. I mentioned the play with Oakland, so that is a bet there, too, and I still think that's obviously still playable. 13.5 are out there. It's what I bet. And there's a couple. I think I see a 14 hanging around as well. Among the others that I have played here in this one, you mentioned New Mexico. Might as well throw that out there. Late 2.5 with the New Mexico Lobos against Clemson. That looks like it's coming back down toward Clemson, so that's sitting at about 2. So, obviously, think that one's still playable with the Lobos. UAB plus 7, fading San Diego State. Guys, the Aztecs, I think, are one of the more, you can mark, make the argument, one of the more overrated teams in the field. It's a team that's 13-19 against the spread on the season, 1-5 against the spread in their last 6 games. The market is just the thought that this team is so much better than what it really is. Jaden Ledee is awesome, but their offense stinks. They can't really shoot. And I think that this is just a team that is worth playing against because the market's perception of San Diego State is a little too high. So took 7 with UAB. Still think that's playable there in that matchup because obviously still 7's available. We'll also throw out 2 Northwestern. Money line, put a little bit on that against Florida Atlantic. Sorry, Kelly. I know the Foul Owls. You would like them to be on the prowl once again. This is just kind of pushed back in the market. Market's just been kind of high on Florida Atlantic this entire year. And I feel like, you know what? I'm willing to push back on a team that has been rated too high by the betting market throughout this entire season with Northwestern. Boo Boo, I think, can make some noise. And I'll throw out one more. I haven't played this yet because I want a health update, but the market's moving in this direction. A lot of people think NC State might be gassed out because of their run in the ACC tournament, Gil. However, you get time off in between. And Texas Tech's kind of beat up here. So I want to see if 2 of their players, Warren Washington among them, is going to play in this matchup against NC State.
All right. The last 2 of the 4 play-in games, the first 4 games, if you will, are tonight. Grambling, Montana State. Montana State favored by 4.5. Colorado and Boise State, our boy Tyson Degenhart, and Boise State 2.5-point dogs. Are playing either of those two?
No, I'm tempted by the Mountain West team. I'll just say this really quickly. I think maybe there's a chance we might be sleeping on this Mountain West conference after past failures. Colorado State whooped that butt yesterday, and that wasn't just because of Virginia's offense. They looked awesome on offense themselves, but that was the only thought I had about those 2 play-ins.
They did whoop that particular butt. That is correct. Right? They did do that. JVT, great spot. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys.
Jonathan Ron Tobel, an Angels fan through and through, blue hat or not.
That's right.
Also a Colts fan.
Colts fan, too. Yeah, it matches his Colts hats.
All over the place. Jonathan Von Tobel at MeJVT. Again, VEASAN Primetime weekdays right here at the network. We got some Giant Killers talk next with Peter Keating and Jordan Brenner. It's a numbers game at VEASAN, the sports betting network. Get ready to dominate the brackets. Turn your picks into profits this tournament with the VEASAN Pro March Mania Betting Guide. Inside this guide, you'll find expert strategies, insider tips, and in-depth analysis that'll give you the edge you need to outshine the competition. From underdog upsets to championship predictions, the VEASAN Pro Betting Guide will have brackets from hosts and experts, NCAA tournament betting trends, and of course, best bets for every round of the tournament. Don't miss out on this game-changing resource. Download the VEASAN Pro March Mania Betting Guide today at VEASAN.com/madness. That's VSIN.com/madness. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always, always appreciate the feedback. Russell Ambrose, UVA's college baseball team, 15 runs, outscored UVA basketball in the first half last night with 14 points. Everybody was making their comps to that. Kevin Ryan, Gil, although Virginia's scoreless streak last night was impressive, I had many way longer in my youth. Hey-o! Everybody's got a joke. GV at New Jersey, New York, he said, as a Seton Hall fan, I can complain about the committee this year for days. What really bothers me is that they're going to use this year as an excuse for tournament expansion when they're actually going to do it because they're getting beat in court left and right and need money. Scott C. Someone told me, I don't know if it's true based on your story about that game in 1979, but your story seems to make it seem so that Dean Smith is solely responsible for there being a shot clock in basketball. Yeah, so what we're referring to, in case you missed in the first segment, is Virginia had a 12-minute, 41-second drought yesterday, and I was thinking about, as bad as the committee was, where does this rank historically in terms of droughts, and it's very difficult to find, but there was a game, again, as a Ute, as they said in My Cousin Vinny, where Dean Smith played 4 corners and held himself scoreless for 20 minutes and 48 seconds, and Duke led that game 7-0 at halftime, 1979. Yes, he was, I mean, I don't know if he's solely responsible for the shot clock, but yes, that was bad for basketball, and that was a huge reason for it. Interestingly, Dean Smith became like the biggest advocate for the 3-point line later. So, You know, what's the joke about Dean Smith also, that he, the only person to hold Michael Jordan down was,
right.
was Dean Smith
yeah,
as well?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And Ryan Hyatt. Well, we lived at Gill, but for guys like Kelly, this is a great time of year to go read John Feinstein's classic book on those late 70s Blue Devils, Forever's Team. Reread it a few years ago, and it's well worth the reading and the history of it. So there you go, book recommendation for you.
Okay, youngins. Great. Is it all about just ball possession for 10-plus minutes?
No, it's a Duke story, I think, in this case. Not the North Carolina story. All right, I love having this guy on, and he and his partner have been doing some form of a giant killer segment in all their various media for what seems like since the Eisenhower administration. They'll tell us for as long as they've been doing it. They are both co-hosts now these days in this current iteration, co-hosts of Underdogs, the Underdog show on the DraftKings Network. It's my old friend Peter Keating and his partner Jordan Brenner, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Gentlemen, how are you?
We are great. Thanks for having us. Thanks so much for that nice introduction as well. And I believe Jordan has that Feinstein book under his pillow, if I'm not mistaken.
And I've always wanted to be identified as Peter's partner, so thanks for that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was that poor taste already from the start?
No.
Oh.
It's lovely.
Peter,
usually wait until the final four to give each other rings, but it could come any time during the tournament.
I see what you did there with partner. All right, so I'll leave it to either of you. First of all, Peter, you were telling me off air, I don't know how much you want this on air, but I'm glad you're doing well. I know you had a little health bout, but I'm great to see you and doing well.
We were on the sidelines. I'm back. There'll be no points subtracted from our points per possession for my performance. I'm back at full strength, Gil.
Okay, good. Let's start with the point of this here is to identify as people are filling out their brackets, obviously. They're going to play upset rewarded pools where they are incentivized to pick upsets. They're also going to play the traditional ones, right, which are 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64. You guys know the drill. But they all want to know where the upsets will be. Let's start with the traditional traits, the profile of teams that have been tried and true through this project you guys have been doing through the years, of what constitutes a team that is often capable of an upset. Jordan, I guess we'll go to you first.
Well, so first of all, we define a bracket-breaking upset. It used to be called giant killers at ESPN. We define that as a game where teams are separated by at least 5 spots. So we don't look at 7-10 matchups. We don't look at 8-9 matchups. We don't look at 4-5 in the second round. Those are largely toss-ups. All right, so you've got this gulf between teams. Then what leads to an upset? Well, on the underdog side, high-risk, high-reward strategies increase a team's variance and leads to more upsets. So where does that manifest itself? Offensive rebounding is a huge trait. Shooting lots of threes increases your bell curve of results. Forcing turnovers. You want to do things that increase the number of bites at the apple, the number of possessions in a game, but you also want to play slow. And the reason is simple. If you're playing Michael Jordan to one-on-one, Gil, do you want to play him to 11 or 1?
I want to play him to 1, Jordan.
Right, because just that one crazy hook shot might go in. So the fewer total possessions in a game against a better team, the less individual skirmishes, if you will, you have to win. So we tend to find that our model likes teams that keep it slow. Conversely, there's a giant component to this, right? Some teams are more vulnerable to upsets than others. Virginia, anyone? Purdue? So those types of teams don't protect themselves against bad shooting nights by doing the things that add extra possessions, again, like offensive rebounding, like forcing turnovers, et cetera.
Yes, first of all, bracket breakers. Giant killers was the old term. My bad. Bracket breakers. We're going to use the current nomenclature on this. Peter, do you remember? So Jordan just brought up Purdue and Virginia. You didn't have UMBC and Fairleigh Dickinson, respectively, as giant killer possibilities those years, did you?
Well, no, but I will say this. We partner with professors from Furman University, and one of them, the chair at the time of the math department at Furman, John Harris, went to the New York Times and was talking about how Virginia's slow pace of play made it likely that they were going to end up in a big upset someday. So, and we did have Furman over Virginia, believe it or not, as our number one most likely upset last year. I'll say this too, nobody had FDU. And not only that, but even though I live in New Jersey, I'm a little resentful of FDU because now that FDU won, we have to treat them in our model. We can't tell our model to ignore it. right? So teams similar to FDU look a little better than they used to our statistical model, but FDU was a terrible team, and Purdue pulled the greatest choke job of all time. Purdue played something like 50 points per 100 possessions, worse than expected. I've never seen anything like it. So I love what FDU did. I wish that nobody would pay attention to how they did it.
Okay, so when you add something like that, so a new thing is put into your model, what was it about FDU when you say you can't ignore that? What do you put into the model about FDU?
Well, you can't put in that Zach Edey only took 11 shots when he played them, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But they were something like 300 and something in the country in every defensive category, right? they could take a lot of threes. You know, there are teams that when they pull off big upsets actually do improve the model. And I shouldn't be joking about this. For example, St. Peter's. St. Peter's played very slow. They were a good offensive rebounding team. There are other teams that when they pull upsets, we call these chameleons. They expand their games come tournament time to do what they need to add risk to their game, to add variance to their play, without sacrificing much. Like, you'll see Vermont every year. Vermont tries to do this. It hasn't worked for them yet, and they have a bad matchup against Duke this year. But every year, Vermont bullies around the teams in its conference. They just play very safe. They dominate their inferior opponents in conference. Then they get to the NCAA tournament, and they start shooting lots of threes. When Harvard was really good about 10 years ago, that's what they would do. They'd get to the tournament. All of a sudden, they'd play more like a wild underdog than a safe bet. So every time teams win, the model adds their characteristics. And when the teams have a good reason for winning, that improves the model.
Okay.
That makes
sense. Talking to Peter Keating.
And the other thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Jordan. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, just the other thing that's important in any statistical model or anything you're writing is to be able to differentiate between what's a trend and what's a fluke. You know, if something has a 99% chance of happening, one out of every 100 times, it's not going to happen. So I feel very comfortable saying that Fairleigh Dickinson, UMBC, those were flukes. You know, that's not necessarily something we want to rely on heavily in trying to predict the next upset, whereas a lot of what we see in the 12-5 games is repeated year in, year out.
Okay.
Year in, year after year after year, yeah.
All right, so we're gonna hit a break here momentarily, and then we're going to go through not only the teams that in this year's bracket that have bracket breaker characteristics, but also, you alluded to it earlier, Jordan, the other side of this is the giants who can experience carnage. We have about 45 seconds before the break. Can you give us one in this bracket of the giants that you think is ripe for carnage?
About Clemson. Clemson has no strong characteristics of protecting itself from a bad shooting night. And in these 6-11 matchups, there's often very little gap between the two teams.
So Clemson, we'll start with them. Clemson off the top. Give me another real quick, if you can think of one.
I'll tell you one that no one's talking about, and while I don't, let's just say our odds are greater than most people would think, and that's Kentucky, okay? Because advanced analytics don't think Kentucky is a 3 seed. They're more like the 19th best team in the country. So they might have like a 20% chance of an upset, whereas the public may look at it as more of like a 10%. We can talk more about their matchups as we go on.
Let's do that. We'll do more of the teams that are ripe for an upset and the teams that have the characteristics to pull off that upset with Peter Keating and Jordan Brenner on the other side. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers, and this is good. Earn a $500 bonus, $500 for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait, though. Download the app now, use code ANG, that's code ANG when you sign up, and earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. Now, it's Gil Alexander, live from Bar Canada here at the D in downtown Las Vegas, joined by my old friend Peter Keating and Jordan Brenner, co-hosts of Underdogs on the DraftKings Network. You can follow Peter on Twitter at Peter Keating, K-E-A-T-I-N-G, and Jordan at Jordan Brenner. You guys got very straightforward Twitter handles, or X handles, as they say now. Jordan, a full disclosure, Jordan was wowing me with the latest in bar mitzvah trends on the break. I'm just amazed by what I just heard. And Peter, this dovetails nicely before we get into the stuff here. Do you remember you and I used to nerd out at Sloan about why the Dodgers celebrated their Jewish heritage, but the Giants didn't?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you always wonder of the six people who used to read my blog posts around 2010, it turned out that you were interested in you either were one of them or you were interested in one of the same subjects. And, you know, why all this nostalgia about the Dodgers leaving Brooklyn and nobody seems to have really cared about the Giants leaving New York? It's all tied in there.
So, heavy Peter, we know one person who cares about the Giants leaving New York.
All right, let's get back into the brackets, and let's continue with the teams that a lot of people are likely to advance in the brackets, but you feel like have the susceptibility to get upset. Are there any other besides Clemson and Kentucky, which we've already mentioned?
Well, let's dig into our sort of likeliest upsets, right?
Okay, let's do that.
So Peter, hit them. I mean, just to put a fine point on Clemson, hit them with a little New Mexico love, okay?
Well, look, New Mexico is one of the top 25 teams in the whole country, according to our model. We loved New Mexico as a value play weeks ago when they were a bubble team. Somehow they only got an 11 seed. In this case, we think they're straight up a better team than Clemson. And this highlights something, which is that as power conference teams keep gobbling up at-large bids, and there's basically no more at-large bids for the smaller conferences except the Mountain West. There's maybe a couple a year now. You get teams that have played strong opponents that are actually pretty good down on the 11 line, right, where for whatever reason the committee didn't think much of them and they may have double digit losses, but they're really strong teams. That includes New Mexico, it includes
Oregon,
it includes Oregon and
NC State,
and also NC State. You know, so that's one group of teams where we kind of just like them as just because they're good teams, right? They're better teams than their seeds would indicate. There's a whole bunch of other teams where they're smaller conference teams that have the characteristics of great underdogs.
Right. So one of those teams is McNeese State. So our model gives them about a 31% chance of beating Gonzaga. It probably would be higher, but Gonzaga profiles as a fairly safe Giant. What we really think is interesting is if McNeese gets by Gonzaga and Kansas manages to get by Samford, by the way, not at all a safe game either. We give McNeese about like a 43% chance of beating Kansas. So if you're taking McNeese to beat Gonzaga, take him to the Sweet 16. And our model doesn't even account for the fact that Kevin McCullough is out for the tournament and who knows what kind of shape Hunter Dickinson is going to be. So Samford, very much alive against Kansas in the first round, about a 30% chance, not even accounting for those injuries. So if you're looking for one sort of like quadrant of the bracket that could have chaos, a McNeese-Samford second round game is not at all out of the realm of possibilities.
Wow. So say again, McNeese State you have is a 43% chance to pull off the outright upset.
Against Kansas in the second round. We have about 31% against Gonzaga.
Yeah. There's 31% and 43%. We've all seen those. Like if we go back to brackets past, we've all seen those crazy matchups moving forward. Peter, you were about to say?
No, we always say, just like mom used to say, if you pick the 12 to beat the 5, you may as well pick them to beat the 4 in some of these cases. McNeese State does everything, you know. We talked about how you get to this high risk, high reward play. You take a lot of threes, you crash the boards, you press for turnovers. McNeese does all of that. Grand Canyon over St. Mary's, we give a 30% chance to also. And they're another program that's out of a small conference that is really strong. They're a good offensive rebounding team for a long shot.
Yeah. So
the other interest.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead, Jerome Gill.
No, go ahead.
Well, the other interesting thing, and I wrote about this today, is sometimes there's as much value in telling you what trendy upset to avoid as there is in picking one. So, for instance, 2 years ago, everybody was all over South Dakota State. It was Jackrabbit Mania. It was a 4-13 game against Providence. And our model didn't like them nearly as much as the country did because they had like a 30-3 record and they were sort of the schoolyard bully, but they didn't play a high risk, high reward style. And we didn't like the matchup against Providence. So our probabilities were lower. We told people to avoid it. Providence won by 9. This year, it's looking like Wisconsin James Madison is that game. Look, we like James Madison. We give them about a 24% upset chance, but the money line implies a 35% chance of winning. So I think that you can get some leverage on people in your pool by going with the chalk there in Wisconsin and avoiding the trendy upset, then picking a couple other ones that people might not have on their radar.
That's a great point. Is there another one that you feel besides besides the Wisconsin game that feels trendy but doesn't really come up on your model?
Every year, people like to pick the Ivy League team because they've seen Princeton do well. They know they can say, these guys are smart. So this year, it's Yale. Yale is a weak – well, Yale's rumored to be smart. I can't confirm that. Yale is a weak Ivy champion, and you just got to run the other way when you see teams that play safe all year long, that emphasize defensive rebounding and avoiding turnovers rather than being aggressive and taking chances. Once they get to the tournament, they are squashed by bigger, better versions of themselves who can gamble a little. And Auburn, I mean, if you're into analytics, you'll love Auburn. I see no reason not to love Auburn. If you love defense and hard work, you should be saying this team was criminally underseeded. There are four. We think they're one of the five best teams in the country. So stay away from Auburn, Yale, unless you can make some money on Auburn.
All right, let me just pop in here because we got a few minutes, and I want to rank these then, because I know you guys used to rank, like, by your model, what are the most likely. So I'm doing this on the fly as you guys are going through. Obviously, you know New Mexico is actually favored in their game, right? So folks who are filling out their brackets, New Mexico ought to be, you know, one of those that they consider highly. That an 11-6 game against Clemson, especially if you are in upset-rewarded pools. The Gonzaga, your model is sort of corroborates with the money line in that game, right? You give, is it McNeese that they're playing?
McNeese,
yeah.
Like you get 31%.
31,
chance,
and the money line, it's about 30%, so it's kind of right on there at plus 230. So how would you rank these in terms of most likelihood?
So in the first round, our top five in order is the Clemson-New Mexico game. That's about 58% toward New Mexico. Then South Carolina against Oregon, we give Oregon about a 43% chance. The third likeliest is the NC State-Texas Tech game. That's about 38%. Then McNeese against Gonzaga, 31%. And Grand Canyon against St. Mary's is about 30%. And then if you want to dig into the second round at some point, we've got some numbers for you there,
All
too.
All right, let's do two there. What do you got in the second round, potentially?
One interesting one that I don't think anyone's really talking about is Carolina, if they face Mississippi State, could be vulnerable. We give that about a 32% chance of happening. Mississippi State is sort of our classic wounded assassin, as we call it, a team that survived a really tough conference slate, but, you know, got beat up, had lost a bunch of games, but have a lot of giant killing characteristics. They offensive rebound very well. So they're a team that could give Carolina some trouble. We also see Marquette having some vulnerabilities regardless of which team they play, whether that's, they play the Boise State Florida winner, right? Marquette is, those are both in the mid-30s in upset chances. Marquette's really vulnerable on the boards, and both those teams are really good rebounding teams. I think Florida's seventh in the country in offensive rebound rate. So those are two that stick out right away.
Wow.
But Jordan, the second round matchup we really want to see, even though it may not be our highest rated one, is, of course, I believe Purdue has a chance to face who, Jordan?
TCU, but, you know, our model doesn't love that upset chance. It's so strange because we're just used to Purdue losing all the time, but for some reason the model sees them safe this year.
No, I think Purdue in a second round matchup against anyone is going to be a prove we're wrong until we're right situation. I think it'll be a lot of fun. I don't think there's going to be pressure on any team like there will be in Purdue in the second round. I also would keep an eye on Texas A&M if they can make to the second round. Best offensive rebounding team in the country. They can't hit a shot, so they just have to keep taking shots and keep taking shots and giving themselves second chances and never let the other team have the ball. They're a fun team to watch with giant killing characteristics, even though they may not have a favorable matchup.
I love it. You too.
And we mentioned Kentucky.
Yeah.
The one last one. If they play NC State, we see about a 36% chance of an upset there in the second round.
Like that one. Get that one in under the buzzer. They're co-hosts of Underdogs on DraftKings Network, Peter Keating, Jordan Brenner. I like that you guys have to hash out the Purdue-TCU thing on your own on Underdogs later. thank you guys so much. Great seeing you both.
Gil, it's always awesome joining you.
Dan Le Batard, next on the DraftKings Network. We're coming back at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.